Franklin Matters Radio Show number 662 in the series. This session shares part of the Franklin Mass Town Council meeting held on Wednesday, November 17, 2021. The meeting was conducted in a hybrid format. Members of the Town Council, Town Administration personnel were in the Council chambers. Some members of the public, along with the guests and key presenters, were in person, some via the Zoom conference bridge, all to adhere to the social distance requirements of this pandemic period. I split the just about a 2-hour and 10-minute meeting into two segments. First covers the opening citizens' comments, approval of the set of minutes, and then the housing authority presentation and discussion covers the bulk of this segment. The second segment covers the legislation for action, council comments, and the closing. Approximately 60 minutes. The show notes contain links to the meeting agenda, so let's listen to this segment of the Town Council meeting of November 17, 2021.
Good evening. Time being 7 o'clock, I call the November 17th, 2021 meeting of the Franklin Town Council to order. Please pause for a moment of silence. Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Announcements from the chair. All citizens are now welcome to attend public board and committee meetings in person. Additionally, in an effort to maximize citizen engagement opportunities, you will be able to continue to participate remotely via phone or Zoom using the provided phone number, or you may click the Zoom link that is on the posted agenda and on the town's website. The phone number is 929-205-6099, and the Zoom ID is 810-9794-9243, and then hit the pound sign. The attached link and phone number will be active for the duration of the meeting for citizens to ask questions, or if you're just interested in watching the meeting, it will be live streamed by Franklin TV and shown on Comcast Channel 11 and Verizon Channel 29, and may be recorded by others. Next item on the agenda is citizens' comments. Citizens are welcome to express their views for up to 5 minutes on a matter that is not on the agenda. The council will not engage in a dialogue or comment on a matter raised during citizens' comments. The town council will give remarks appropriate consideration and may ask the town administrator to review the matter. Is there anyone in the audience this evening that would like to speak on an item not on tonight's agenda? You had your hand up first, please. If you'd come over to the mic and just name and address, please.
Hi. Hello, my name is Maxwell Marangello. I live at 127 Central Park Terrace, Franklin, Massachusetts. I'm here today because at the next meeting, the council will have an opportunity to lower the property tax burden faced by middle and low income families. According to the Massachusetts Budget Policy Center, property taxes are a regressive tax. They explain on their website that households with the highest 1% of incomes pay less than 3% of their income in property taxes on average, while those with the lowest incomes tend to pay over 5% in property taxes. This simply isn't fair and is a burden on those who could least afford it. Towns like Brookline, however, have found a solution. They have a blanket residential exemption that exempts a fixed amount of property values for all single family homes. If Franklin were to do the same thing, say exempt the first $100,000 of property value, and then raise the total tax rate, they can make the tax code more progressive while keeping a balanced budget. Under such a plan, modest homeowners will see a tax cut, while wealthier households will contribute a more equitable share. My understanding is that this is allowed by Proposition 2.5, which affects only the total amount of revenue a town can raise, not the tax rate itself. In addition, Franklin already does this with the Community Preservation Act and more narrow exemptions. I ask not that the council adopt such a tax rate at the next tax hearing next month. It's simply too soon and needs buy-in from the community. In addition, it would need to be assessed how this would affect people in apartment buildings who rent, as well as businesses who would be ineligible for an exemption. I ask instead that the council adds a motion to the agenda out of the tax hearing meeting to assign a committee to study this proposal, with the intention of it being implemented the following year. I urge the council to act to foster a community discussion around this issue, promote equity and fairness, and most importantly, support a tax cut to Franklin residents who need it. Thank you.
Thank you, Max. Is there anyone else in the audience? Please just come forward and identify yourself, name and address, please.
I'm a little less nervous this time.
Thank Good.
You, Mr. Chairman. I'd first like to thank Mr. Hallam for his prompt response this morning to an email for a big question of mine. He responded so quickly, it made my head spin. In addition to that, Mr. Brown responded on top of an email. My question was, there's two major projects affecting our neighborhood, one on King Street, one on Washington Street. It's the neighborhoods in the middle. And it appears there's so many meetings going on for both of them, all the different committees and things like that, that they're overlapping each other. So you may have, in this instance, one a zoning meeting and a
conservation.
Two different meetings anyway, both tomorrow night, right? And so my ask was to say, hey, these are affecting, they affect the whole town, but they affect a large neighborhood. And if we could, I don't know how you coordinated, but that's what the thing I'm saying to you is there's gonna be a coordination so we can participate and be present at all these meetings that affect the neighborhood. And basically, just real quick, that's one of the reasons that I came out tonight. I've been coming to so many meetings lately, but it's just to make sure everybody's aware of what's going on. This is our town. It might be our neighborhood, but it's our town. A major project on Washington Street, they expect to have over 135 parking spaces. The one, the most recently on the planning board Monday, is at the King Street interchange, where they are looking to build a 300,000 square foot distribution facility. They are expect to have over 500 trips, including over 175 tractor trailer trucks a day at this area. Anyone who has driven down King Street at any time of the commuting hours on either time, just shake your head, because you sit back to the new light on the Washington Street. My commute from my house on Washington Street starts, it takes me 20 minutes now to get to 495. I know this traffic studies, I read the traffic study and it said no impact. Not sure how that's gonna happen. But anyway, that's all I wanted. My goal is to make sure that people are aware, not only the council, but the townspeople. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak on that item, not on tonight's agenda? You know the deal.
Good evening. Jim Derrick, 35 Wampanoag Drive. I wanted to bring to the attention of the community that tomorrow night at the Franklin High School, 6 p.m., there's going to be an event that's being hosted by the Franklin Substance Abuse Task Force, which is a community collaboration between the Franklin High School and the Franklin Schools and the SAFE Coalition. The event is going to be a community conversation helping identify and address mental health and substance abuse among families within our community, particular to the schools. We're going to have a brief introduction followed by a panel discussion, which will involve everything from police to a physician to Josh Hanna to others with lived experience. And it's a great way for the community to come out and learn about some of the mental health issues that their loved ones are facing in the schools and ask any questions that they may find they need help with. So that's tomorrow night, 6 to 8 p.m. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Jim. Is there anyone else in the council chambers that would like to speak on an item not on tonight's agenda? Okay, is there anyone out in Zoom land that would like to speak on an item not on tonight's agenda?
There's
only two
people. Yeah,
there's not too many.
It's very small. So. Doesn't appear, and I think I know the people that are on it, so
yeah.
I don't think they're going to be asking a question this evening. Okay, moving on. We'll move on to the approval of minutes. I'd entertain a motion to approve the minutes from October 20th, 2021.
So moved.
Second.
Motion and a second. Discussion, additions, deletions. Seeing none, the vote will come on the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Proclamations and recognitions. We don't have any this evening. Appointments not scheduled, no hearings, no license transactions, presentations, and discussions. We do have one this evening, Franklin Housing Authority. Jamie, would you like to do the lead-in?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and through you to the council. Before we turn it over to the Housing Authority and the Executive Director, Lisa, I just want to acknowledge, I believe this is an item brought forth by Councilor Colegri and a few other members. In hearing some of the stories relative to affordable housing, but more so really about the various housing resources that the Housing Authority provides. I think we usually have them in every couple of years. So now, Mr. Chairman, turn it over to them and walk us through the talking points they have.
Mr. Chairman, my name is George Stanello. I'm the chairman of the Housing Authority. We want to thank you and the council for the opportunity to come and talk to you about all the great work we're doing at the Housing Authority. We're here to make a presentation on the housing application process and what we see these days as a tremendous need from the community for housing. We have with us tonight the Vice Chairman, Chris Feely, and a Commissioner, Andrew Keppel. I want to take time to introduce Lisa Audette. Lisa has been with the Housing Authority since 1995. She has done phenomenal work for the Housing Authority and for the Franklin community. And we're here to answer any questions that you may have about our process. And we hope that we can walk away from today with some solutions on the crisis that we see on a day in and day basis. So with that, I'll introduce Lisa Rodette. She's our executive director.
Thank you, George. Lisa, please.
Thank you very much for having us here this evening. We welcome the opportunity. We were asked to make a little bit of a presentation regarding our waiting list, which since the state has taken on a statewide waiting list, we now enter the applicants enter the waiting list through a state system and not directly through the housing authorities in which they want to reside. So right now on the waiting list as of today, we are up to 2,039 senior disabled applications on our applicants on our waiting list, and 6,391 applicants for family housing, and 126 applicants for congregate housing. Now, I know that you're also interested in how many of those applicants are local residents, and it doesn't seem like a big number compared to the overall number, but it is a big number when you look at the local applicants on our list, 114 for senior disabled housing, and 200 families, local families, looking to be housed in this town. Families and residents of low income that need help. I wanted to bring your attention to the CHAMP system and how it works so that you better understand how much our hands are tied when it comes to housing people in our local town. So the CHAMP system can be accessed by anybody online at mass.gov/apply-for-public-housing. The applicant would go onto that website, They would fill in all of their information, and they would claim at that point what their preference or priority is. There are several preferences and priorities that give applicants standing on the list. So the higher the priority, the lower the number, the higher priority they are on the list. So I did put together a sample of what our priorities and preferences are so that you can see how people are placed on the list. At the when an applicant is filling out an application online and they're claiming that they're in emergency for housing, they're pretty much going to check off everything that might apply to them to give them the highest placement on the waiting list. So when that happens, we have to really sift out what information they give us actually gives them, according to the state regulation, gives them that preference or priority. So priority one is for somebody who's displaced by natural forces or by, for instance, a fire that is not due to their own negligence. So we had a house in Franklin that was recently struck by lightning. The fire started. Those residents in that building would be offered a number one priority because of the situation that they're in. Number two priority would be displacement by public action, urban renewal or things of that nature. The town is putting a new road in, development is being demolished, things of that nature is a priority two. We don't see many of those at all. Priority three is homeless displaced due to public action, the sanitary code violations that the applicant didn't, you know, create themselves, while living in substandard units that are not fit for human habitation. Priority four is the most, the one that we see on the list most often. It would be applicants that are either homeless or facing homelessness. And facing homelessness doesn't mean that my landlord's going to kick me out when he gets around to it. It has to be, I've got an eviction notice. I'm going to lose my housing and I need a roof over my head. So applicants don't necessarily understand that, and they say, well, I'm going to be homeless because I'm not able to pay my rent and my landlord's eventually going to be done with me. So, you know, so it's most people would check that off if they're in danger of not being able to pay their rent. Severe medical emergencies, such as somebody's living in a third floor unit and it's a 90-year-old person that has, you know, a hip replacement, can't do stairs anymore. Therefore, they need to be, they're actually staying in place. They can't live a normal life and get out of their unit. So that would be considered an emergency as well. Excuse me. An abusive situation, domestic violence is also considered a priority four. Priority four, five is BAHVP participant program, which is a temporary housing program that the state has. It is meant to be a temporary program. It is very limited in the amount of time that somebody can live there, and therefore they are in imminent danger of losing their housing. Priority six is a transfer for good cause. This is within a housing authority. If somebody is looking for a larger unit than the one that they have now, for instance, a family comes in with one child and they end up having another child and it's the opposite sex, they're eligible for another bedroom. So therefore they can put their name on the waiting list. When their name comes to the top of the waiting list for that size unit, then they will be picked to be placed into a larger unit. Priority 7 is a standard applicant. And beyond that, we have preference categories. We have two preference categories. One is for local residents, and the second is for veterans. So if based on the application, you get a 1, a 2, a 6, a 7, wherever you are on the list. So when we pull a list, and mind you, we have over 6,000 families on our waiting list. We're pulling a list for a two-bedroom apartment, for instance. We'll probably pick about 50 applications. It's very time-consuming to get the paperwork out. The applicant has 10 days to respond. We can refresh the list more often than not in 10 days. We don't have enough information from the applicants to refresh a list. Refreshing a list means that, okay, time's up, stop. It's a stop in time. So if we have people on the list that are verified, that we know we have already verified their, say, homelessness, or their local residence, we've proven it by their license, mail, town records, DD 214 for veterans. We verify their income. We know that they are a qualified applicant and that their preferences are have been reviewed. Then we have somebody verified on the list. We can refresh that list. We have one person out of 50 that we can put into one unit. It's a lot of work. So when we pull a list, we really want to pull a list for more than one applicant. We would rather keep the list open for a little bit of time, try to give people a little more time to get their verification paperwork in. So when we refresh it, we have two or three people that we can house in the next few units. In the family units, it's not as important because we seldom have family units come available. However, the senior units are pretty much on a rotating schedule. We have about 20 a year, average 20 a year, units that we turn over in one-bedroom senior disabled units. So we do like to have somebody in the ready, ready to go. And that's how the waiting list works. And more recently, our annual audits by the state, we are being, our waiting lists are being reviewed very, very closely, to the point where the state is looking at the list that we pulled. They're looking at the application, the applicant number, the pull list number, who did we house, who did we offer units to, were they housed, why were they, why weren't they. All of this information is on an annual audit now. So there's very little room at all to sway from the regulation. And I think that probably the regulation was needed for the list, for the CHAMP process, but the process is very time consuming and onerous on the housing authority as well as on the applicant. Are there any questions regarding that?
Questions from the council? Councilor Pellegrini.
And George, and the rest of those from the committee, thank you for coming tonight.
You're welcome.
And Lisa, I've known you for many, many years working with you too. You do a wonderful job, and thank you for that. Once the state got involved, they kind of screwed us, didn't they? You don't have to answer that. But they did. When you think about it, we were working very, very well in town before this all came about. And we had our own Franklin residents that were able to move up and be put on the list and moved up. Now, we have so many people from out of town, which I find very unfair. First question is, how many do we have from Franklin on the list? Do you have a number?
Yes, it's on the bottom of your sheet.
114.
For senior housing.
314 total.
Yep, 314.
The 114 plus the 200
yes.
family.
Yeah.
And that number changes regularly.
Every day.
Mm-hmm. That's why some of our people that have been waiting really could be moving up there, except for the fact that we have so many other people on the list and they're just kind of pushed aside. I know an individual, and I've brought this up before, that had a fire in an apartment that he was in, okay? And he wasn't able to get back on the list. He was on the list, let me say it correctly. He was on the list, got an apartment outside of the housing authority, had a fire there, and now he was put back on the list, but not where he was. He was put on the bottom of the list, correct? That's how things work.
No.
No? Oh, good. Okay.
So if you're on the waiting list and say you're a standard applicant, and then you have a fire and now you become an emergency, you don't have to start back at number one at the bottom of the list again. You can keep your timestamp is yours.
Even though it wasn't in the housing authority where this apartment was?
Correct.
Correct. Okay.
So what does sometimes happen is if we reach out to somebody and we are unable to contact them, we have to move on to the next person. And I believe the case that you're talking about is what happened. So now that person would get taken off the list. Now they have to reapply. They've lost their placement.
Which is so unfair. Because now this person was able to, well, first of all, lived in a car for many, many, many months. Then he was able to get into, I believe it was Medway. I'm not absolutely sure. Which is ridiculous when you think about it. Here's our town. We can't take this person that was born and brought up here, but yet we can have Medway take them. And personally, I just don't like that. Is there a way, and I know that the state has taken this over, as we said at the very beginning, what can we do? Can we file any kind of legislation to help our own residents here? I mean, not that I'm against people that live out of town by any means, but I want to take care of the residents here in town. And that's what I think we should be doing. So now this person is in Medway at the bottom of the list and probably never going to get up to the top of the list and have housing available. And I just don't know what to say when people come up to me and say, why are we doing this? Now I know certainly it's because of the state, not because of the town, our rules and regulations. But there is nothing that we can do.
Yes, there is something you can do. You can petition the legislators to change the laws and the regulations regarding public housing. People look at things different ways. You know somebody personally, so you're looking at it one way. But if you look at it a different way, in that if somebody else is living in the car and somebody has a roof over their head, who should come first on the list? So it all depends on how you're looking at it. And I think the state has reviewed these issues over and over again. But if you feel strongly about how the regulation is, absolutely. Contact your legislators and get the ball rolling, definitely.
Well, I would ask my fellow counselors to start working on something like this. We have to petition the legislature so that we can take care of our own residents first. And it would probably come from a resolution of that through the chair to Jamie. How do you think this should be done? Mark has his hand up.
Mark.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you're referring to general legislation, I assume, as opposed to local. You'll go nowhere with an attempt to get just an exception for Franklin. I think what Lisa was talking about is an overall amendment of the current legislation and regulations.
So do we go?
You can still go through your legislature, legislators, and get them to sponsor legislation to do it.
Okay, all right, well.
Jamie, follow up.
Through you, sir. And so there's really two legislative routes. There's the first route, which would be a home rule petition, which you have to respect the fact that you have the right to do it in Massachusetts. Uh-huh. This body could file a bill for that sole goal. But to Mark's point, every city or town is going to want the same exemption. You know, and so therefore the state system, you know, when you go through the committee process, through the legislative process, it's highly unlikely something like that would ever see the light of day, because every city or town would say, we want the same thing. And to the second point, the second legislative relief might be, is, and I'll be happy to send an email to Jeff Roy, I think first you gotta find out what bills were actually filed this session on these related issues. There may be something that was filed by another lawmaker to actually correct the system. I will remind everybody in the room, about a decade ago, Governor Patrick did take this issue on, and he tried to make one housing authority for the whole state. And there have been numerous legislative attempts to reconfigure them by county, bring more control to the local level. And as you could imagine, this is a very complicated issue. And the main reason why is the funding for all of this traditionally comes from the state. This is not a locally sourced revenue choice the town of Franklin makes. These are state resources going into, and state liability protections that are going into the projects and the housing authorities that are out there. So I would say the home rule petition, certainly within anybody's right to do that, going to be very, very complicated, very difficult to get passed. And number two, you know, I'm happy to ask Jeff Roy to maybe come by and give a report of some legislation that's been filed, what Mark called general legislation, to just see if there's any bill that the council would support, and then see if Jeff Roy and Karen Spilka and Becca Rausch could support that legislation as well.
Thank you. I'll close by just saying thank you once again to you, your committee, and all, and I know your hands are tied, but we're going to try to untie them. Okay? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Councilor Pellegrini. Councilor Chandler.
Through you, Mr. Chairman. Hi, Lisa. Hi, George. Thank you to your whole committee. Good presentation. I just had a question, a thought, and maybe a possible solution. First, I agree with Councilor Pellegrini. We will have to work with the legislature, and we know that's an uphill battle. But you might have answered this. You said you have some turnover. The question I got for you guys was, say somebody, you have a second floor up there that does not have an elevator in a lot of places. So what happens when someone gets, you know, their hips finally go, or how hard is it for them to move down to a first level?
Transferring a current tenant to a different unit, if the unit is smaller, or if it's a medical transfer to a unit of the same size, is an administrative transfer. When the tenant wants to move to a larger unit, they need to go on the waiting list.
Okay, so if they're in a one bedroom upstairs and all they need is the one bedroom downstairs, you can do that pretty easily.
Yes.
Excellent, okay, that helps. I know you've been doing this here in Franklin for about 26 years. I saw like you have to turn down like a domestic violence case that comes looking for housing. It must just tear at your heart every day, some of these things. Because that's a priority for domestic violence when they come to you, the kids, maybe that's another thing to work with the legislation about, to maybe move that up.
I could come here every single meeting and bring a story that'll rip the heart out of your chest.
Yeah.
You know, and we're subject to these situations, hearing them, and it breaks our hearts, and as it does all the staff members. But there's nothing we can do about it. We need more housing for the people that need it.
Okay, one last thing,
sure.
Mr. Chairman. So, it's my, through you to probably Jamie. It's my understanding, if they had some land, Jamie, that we could actually, with their budgets and everything, we could actually get some housing built. Is that true,
Jamie?
Through you, Mr. Chairman. So a couple quick things. Obviously, this body is very familiar with the Franklin Ridge Project.
Yeah.
And that is, just so the public's aware, that was 6.5 acres of town land that we did donate, not necessarily the Housing Authority, but with the Housing Affordable Trust, not only the 6.5 acres, the town has also contributed $500,000 to that project. And in addition, we did all the work as a staff to get that comprehensive permit through the ZBA. That's a permitted project of 60 units of senior housing in the town of Franklin. I know I say it over and over. I'm probably gonna say it 10,000 more times in the next 5 years to get it funded. I know it's a $25 million project. I think I've made all the arguments publicly about it. It really comes down to money. The second point to your question, Councilor Chandler, maybe in the spring, Habitat for Humanity came to me requesting property and some new projects. And so for the first time in a bunch of years, I had the town GIS staff, Kate, and their team do a complete soup to nuts evaluation of all land in the town of Franklin, the town of Franklin owns, that could be put forth towards housing. And the good news is I did find 3.25 acres of property on the town line near Washington Street, on the Rentham town line. I'm pleased to say that through the Community Preservation Act, through the administrative expense line item that you all authorized last year, we're gonna hire a consultant, which is a benefit of CPA, for a nominal cost to be able to essentially plan out those two pieces of land to see what the feasibility is of doing another 8 units of housing down on those two pieces of land. I can tell you that there's not much else other than this. It's very scarce. There's a couple of smaller parcels that have some permitting difficulties that are maybe one house lots. But in terms of public property that's not already owned for conservation purposes or under Article 97 or some other stature, I know it doesn't fit the full need, but in working with George and Chris and Lisa, you know, we do think that this idea and this concept and this project has a lot of potential, just like the project up on Plain Street that many of you are familiar with. You know, it'll take some years, but we have met and talked about it a couple times, and George has done a great job committing to us that the financing will work out. So we're in the infancy of this project, but I do want everybody to know that, you know, at the end of the day, this comes down to money. And at the end of the day, we could have all the land, we could have no land. At the end of the day, it takes the will of a lot of people to get together. And like we're seeing with Franklin Ridge, it's a $25 million project. And we just need everybody really at the state and federal level to prioritize housing a lot more and to allocate more money for it. It's just that simple. Otherwise, I could have 4 or 5 acres, but if they can't get the financing, it makes it a challenge. And the same thing with Franklin Ridge. You know, I've said it to everybody before. You give me $25 million today, and all I ask for a lot, I'll get you 60 units in 3.5 years. That's pretty quick. That's really quick. We're also working with Habitat for Humanity on 2 separate single lot projects, potential projects. The housing production plan has a lot of great recommendations, free stuff on inclusionary zoning we could do. And then I ask the question, which sometimes gets people upset, but you know, where's the private investment? The taxpayers of Franklin and the state, our staff working with that, we're doing all of what I just talked about as a little old town in a market of expensive supply and demand materials and homes. We can't do it alone. We do what we can. I know they agree the Washington Street project has a tremendous amount of potential, but it's still only going to yield about 8 units. So the question then comes, where else and what else can we do? I hope that answers some of your question, Councilor Chandler, in terms of other land that's in town.
It does. And just lastly, as a council, we may have to think about when we do buy some more open space, maybe there could be some veterans housing involved in that or senior housing. Just things to all think about now, because obviously they have no more room. And we have, look at this waiting list. That's what I'm getting at. I mean, even thoughts of the acreage of Davis Thayer building behind there, just any thoughts like that. But thank you for listening.
Thank you, Councilor Chandler. Councilor Cormier-Ledger.
Through you, Mr. Chairman, thank you for the presentation. My question is, the
total applicants, those are people that have identified Franklin as a place they would like to live, correct?
That's correct. And when somebody is applying on the CHAMP system, at the end of the application, they will have the opportunity to check off any town or city in the Commonwealth in which they are willing to live. Some people, very few, I would guess, check everything off because they're in such desperate need. Most people will check off their hometown and the surrounding towns because if they can get close to home, if they can be close to their support, family and friends, that's where they really want to be, and that's what most people do on the CHAMP waiting list. So if you're applying for family housing, for instance, and you want to live in, say, at Plainville Housing Authority, well, they don't have any, so when you get to the end of the application, that won't be a selection for you to make. You have to, you know, go in a neighboring town.
Sure. Do you know what the total number is statewide that's looking for housing?
I don't know off the top of my head. I went to a meeting last week about congregate housing because it's statewide a very difficult program to house people in congregate housing, which is a group home. What we have in Franklin is one unit that has four lockable bedrooms. The residents that live there will be sharing in the four bedroom unit. There are two bathrooms, a big living room, a big kitchen, and so all your private area is your bedroom. And it's a difficult program to house. The state is looking to take the congregate program off the CHAMP waiting list because people are just clicking in desperate need to go anywhere, but when they realize they have to live with three other people they don't know, you don't know if it's going to be male or female or old or young or disabled or what religion or race or they are not, many people are not looking for that type of housing. So it's really creating a lot of energy and time to whittle through that list. But with the, getting back to my point, I apologize. That list, we had 200 applicants on that list. We were looking to house four bedrooms. We pulled the entire waiting list and we got six applicants that actually said that yes, that I would be willing to live in that type of situation. So out of those six people, three of them dropped off. One of them has been reviewed by the MAT team and deemed ineligible. And that was about 3 months ago, and we have 126 people on our congregate waiting list again. It's crazy. So the statewide, there are 6,000 applicants on the congregate waiting list for 2,000 units statewide.
So my final question then, if we have 6,391 families that would like to, you know, I'm assuming that's family members, that's people, right?
No, that's applications.
So that's, the number is actually larger than for actual number of people?
Yes.
So 6,391 families have applied to live in Franklin.
Correct.
Do we know where they are now? Because I'm assuming this isn't a homeless number, this is simply they're seeking to come to Franklin, and I don't mean that with any disrespect, I'm just trying to understand, because obviously housing is a gigantic issue statewide.
Right. Franklin is a town that's very desirable because of the train stations as well.
So and our schools and everything.
And the schools, of course. But when you're looking more at the low-income population, many may not have transportation. The train is a great avenue for people to get to their jobs. That puts us a little higher on the desirability list, right, for applicants. Franklin has great school system, has buses. You know, there's a lot of potential in Franklin. There's a lot of support in the town also. Places that people can get help, can get on their feet, And the community in Franklin just is perfect, you know, perfect for that. It's a very warm and inviting community. So I don't know where they're all coming from, but I don't blame any of them for wanting to live in Franklin.
No, I don't blame anybody for wanting to live in Franklin. I asked the question because if there was an emergency need, meaning we had, you know, some of these priority ones, priority twos, and if they were local, meaning they were homeless or, you know, had an emergency situation, I think we would want to know just so we could see what we could do within our power, within the legislator's power, just especially with winter coming up.
With the 200 families and the 114 senior disabled people that are on our waiting list, just because they're local applicants, I didn't identify whether they are emergencies, whether they are domestic violence, whether they're, you know, what their situation is. Some of those may be emergencies.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Councillor Cormier-Ledger. Councillor DeLorco.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, George and Lisa. Thanks for coming in. It's a great presentation. A couple of things that we get asked all the time is, like, if they came up, they come up to us and they say, can we get into senior housing? How long is it going to take? And we have no answer, and I don't think you have an answer either. So
right.
Just so people know, the average, you say, is, what, 20 turnarounds a year, maybe?
2 years ago, we had 35, which was an extremely high number for us. Our first development, senior development, was built in 1960.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the people that really moved in back then are really up there. So we are seeing a little bit more of a turnover with people who need to go to nursing homes or pass away. But typically, our average is about 20 senior disabled units a year.
Okay. And just so the public knows, so this 6,391, that's on the list, that has nothing to do with the Franklin Ridge, right? That's a different list, right?
Correct.
So that's another.
The affordable housing in Franklin, the people on my waiting list would not likely be able to afford the affordable housing in Franklin.
Okay. Just so people know, we get that question too. We can't go there, can we go up there, you know? So I just want that out there. And thank you for coming in.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Councilor DeLorco. Councilor Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Back in 2014-15, there was a partnership with Tri-County to build 15 Beaver Court. And that was, I believe that was through the House of Concern.
Yeah.
Correct, right? Jamie, what was that through? You call?
Being told it was a 40B.
That was a 40B. Okay. Is there a possibility for us to do partnerships with private entities to help support building some of this housing? I guess this is probably more to Jamie, the question. Is there, for instance, what you proposed for, like, down in the south part of Franklin, in order to build these type of units, is there a potential to have a private partnership to build these? The reason I say that is because just to build that house at 15 Beaver Court, that was at cost back in 2014-15. That was $158,000 to build a 59 square foot house for family. At today's costs, exuberant, four times more, you're talking upwards of $600,000 in just material costs, just to build a new 1,500 square foot house on a good size, you know, half an acre lot or 1 acre lot. That we obviously can afford that, but would there be possibilities for private partnerships to actually build some of that affordable housing?
Through Mr. Chairman, I mean, there's always an opportunity for the private sector to be involved in housing construction. And I think recently, it's unclear, not just in Franklin, but other towns, how often that really happens. I think part of the issue is framing the rules so that that becomes the culture where their investment is somewhere in the normal projects that are going on in town. It's a little different than what these folks are talking about, just in general, the affordability problem.
Right.
And I think, there are opportunities for in-kind donations. We see that often. In terms of a contractor saying, I'll go lay the concrete, I'll lay the foundation, things of that sort. If the housing authority were to go finance through a bank, you know, the loan to construct something like on Washington Street. I'm sure to offset the financial liability, they'd be more than happy to accept a series of donations from licensed individuals to do that. I will say on projects like that, sometimes it gets really complicated coordinating it all. A lot of times on a major project, you're hiring a general contractor. But I think by and large, the message that you're trying to send Councilor Jones is a good one, in the sense of when the private sector wants to step up, I think all of us, Lisa, George, Chris, I think we're all here ready and open ears to listen to the local private sector to say, well, what would you like to do? We're here for you. So I agree with you, Councilor Jones. It's certainly an opportunity. I think it's just an issue that people have to work on.
I think what I'm getting at is in essence to incentivize private entities to help partner up with the buildings that these buildings build. And I think honestly we have so many different entities that come into the town looking to develop their own level of things. It'd be nice if we could have something that we would incentivize with them and say, listen, you help us with this, we'll help you with that. One hand washes the other. We need to try to have these partnerships in order to afford building this type of housing. It's something that we need to seriously sit down and kind of scratch your heads on in order to figure out how we're going to fund this, because at the current cost of things, it's just not feasible to build these types of houses. And it's sad because we so desperately need them. I mean, the numbers are quite clear at how much we need them, and I completely understand them. Ten's point, the desirability of Franklin to come to you. Your logic is sound. People are going to want to come to Franklin because it's a very transient town. It's very easy to access many of the resources that they require, as well as get into the city with the two train stations. If you understand the logic behind that, I guess my big question that comes out of today's discussion is, what's the most logical step moving forward? And I know this is probably something you guys think about every single day. It's like, how do we solve this problem? I heard Cody talk about this several times before. And I would love to continue to have this at even at a subcommittee level or another of different meetings, so that we can have some real viable discussions on what some logical, viable next steps are to help solve this problem. Because I've heard this for 12 years, but to me, I haven't actually seen a real kind of push to get a lot of this stuff done. And I do realize we have our hands tied when it comes to the state and stuff, but I would really love to see more discussion on this at a subcommittee level so that we can sit with them and figure out what we're going to do. So at least something, because this is 6,300 families. You know, the only thing I can think of is, my God, what if that was me? You know, what if I had a dire need for my family because of whatever reasons happened? That would be a difficult situation. I can only assume that percentage of these families are in dire need, and they would love to have that need met. But I regress. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's my whole point was trying to come up with some kind of private partnerships.
Understood. Point well taken, for sure. Councilor Hamblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Lisa and George and the whole team, Housing Authority team, for being here tonight. I have a couple of questions that actually Councilor Pellegrini mentioned that it used to be, and you used to have control in Franklin here, and then it went to the state too.
Yes.
Then you have to follow the state rules.
We always followed the state rules.
Okay.
However, our waiting list wasn't as readily available for everybody across the state to just apply to freely. They would have to seek us out. Now it's one website everybody goes to, and they have access to put themselves on a list in any town in the Commonwealth.
Okay, so there's a checklist, like you said.
Yes.
It wasn't like that before. They had to actually come
to
you
have to
individually.
Apply at every individual housing authority.
Okay, all right. Thank you. So when you have said that you have a 20 unit turnover for the senior housing. How many possible units are there?
The Housing Authority in Franklin has 218 units altogether.
Okay.
Of them, we have 165 senior disabled one-bedroom units. We have a four-bedroom congregate. We have two DDS buildings that are under Chapter 689, the property on Plain Street and other property on Brook Street. Those are 16 units. We have, let me see, 33 family units. All of that is our state portfolio. And we, in addition to that, we own three individual properties. One is in Dover Farms. Mm-hmm. We have one on Daniel Street, and we have another property on Ruggle Street. Those properties, because of the intelligence and the looking out of the box, outside the box, if you will, the Board of Commissioners at the Franklin Housing Authority is always looking for an opportunity to make a home for just one more family, one more person. So for one of these properties, we got the right of first refusal. Is that what it's called, or last refusal? I can't remember what first refusal. Okay, sorry, I don't get any of those. But we got that in the mail, so we contacted the state to find out if there's a way the Housing Authority could buy the property. The owner was not finding anybody of low income or the income limits to buy the property, so we were able to, through changing of the deed, we were able to obtain that property. We got a local bank. Again, Franklin is terrific with this local support. We got a local bank to finance it for us 100%, and we've owned that now for probably 15 years. We got an award through the state for our program. We don't have to follow the state housing rules for our individual programs, but we, of course, we have rules that we have to follow in housing people in our individual units. And one of the top rules is if you're a local resident, you do get a top priority.
Okay, that's good. That's good. So when you say that you, so you have an opening and you say that you can pull a list, so do you, is a list that you pull, is that for once a year, or is that when you have an opening, you pull this list of, how many did you say, 60 potential people?
It depends. It depends on how many people we're looking to house. For instance, we know that you probably are aware we had a fire in one of our units, in one of our buildings. We have a building that will have four vacancies when that building comes back online. We expect that probably somewhere in January, February. We'll pull a list of probably 50 to 100 people to vet the applicants for that four units. But and we'll pull a list every time we have a vacancy, so when we have four units, we can pull one list and say it's for four units.
Okay.
And then once that list is used up, or 3 months passes, the list expires.
Okay.
Then we have to pull another list.
So when you I was going to ask another question.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. So when you pull the list, do you go, so you showed us these priorities that you go by. So do you have to pick people that are priority one first?
Yes.
Okay.
We start at the top of the list. So the ones, twos, threes, fours, they get pulled first.
Okay. And then can you see if they're veterans or if they're from Franklin?
Yes.
As well.
So say we pull a list and there's one Franklin resident at the bottom, and we have 10 days to work on that list. People send things in to verify their preferences or priorities. We have a unit ready. According to the state, we have to house somebody in that unit within 30 days, and we get fined. The state actually charges us for having an empty unit. So we might have to close a list on the 10th day if we have one person on that list that we can house.
Right.
So that list might only be worth 10 days and it's no good anymore.
All right, sounds like it's a lot of work and a lot of people.
It is a lot of work, a lot of paper, a lot of stamps. a lot of expenses. Honestly, the stamps are outrageous. The envelopes alone are 28 cents a piece because of the pile of paperwork that has to go in the envelope. You know, it's a lot of hours in the office, and it's a big expense for the Housing Authority.
I'd like to just say that I agree with my fellow counselor Chandler about the abusive situation, that maybe we could, when we do some sort of legislation, hopefully we can try to move that up or talk to our local legislators to do that. And also, Councilor Jones mentioned something that we could do. I think we have the housing production plan when it comes back from the state. Mm-hmm. I think it would be good for all of us to work together on that. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Councilor Hamlin.
Thank you.
Councilor Frangillo.
Thanks. Councilor Hamlin just touched on my main thing, which is, you know, in terms of increasing affordable housing stock, we have laid out some strategies in the Housing Production Plan, and the answers are not necessarily mysteries, that they just take some work. One is changing zoning to allow for more and diversified housing stock. Another is encouraging through policy, encouraging more subsidized housing, and the last is allowing, building public housing. So we have a general understanding, and I think that there are measures that we can take. My question to you guys is, how can we help? Like, how, you know, if we have the resources, how can we better support you or your residents?
Like Jamie said, it's all about land.
Yeah.
Land, land,
money.
Are there concerns that residents have around accessing basic needs or quality of roads? Or, I don't know. Are there other things, before buying and building public housing?
There are certainly always things that take money to fix. On our list of things to do, we get a formula funding budget annually from the state, in which we try to take care of our priorities first. And priorities typically are building envelope, you know, roofs, windows, doors, those, so we can protect the inside of the building. The buildings are definitely getting older. The sidewalks are, compromised. There is a sidewalk on Wachusett Street, which one of my residents fell on not that long ago. It's at the end of Central Park Terrace, and it's right on the corner. It's broken up, and it needs work. That's something maybe the town could help us with. There's always something to do. We apply for every grant that we can get, every program that's available to us. You may recall we recently finished a program that we, it was a HILAP program that we were able to apply for because the Franklin Housing Trust gave us $150,000 of funds to offset our ask. So the state is very favorable at giving agencies money if we have something to put down first. And of course, the Housing Authority, we don't have any money. Our average rent in our senior housing is like $450. We're living on it. We keep the lights on with it, but we don't have a lot of frills. So with that $150,000 that the Franklin Affordable Housing Trust gave us, we were able to put together a package worth $2.5 million. We renovated 40 units of senior disabled housing, which was huge. But we have 165 senior units. The units that were renovated were built in 1965. We have 40 units that were built in 1960 that could use help also. Mm-hmm. Our largest development on Central Park Terrace was built in 1975. Mm-hmm. And 75 was quite a ways ago. They're getting older also. And so our small amount of funds will help with some of the upkeep, but it isn't enough upkeep to really to really do what is needed to make everybody comfortable and proud of where they live. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got a long, long list of needs.
That's great. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Frangillo. Councilor Sheridan?
Yes, thank you for the presentation. Now, I'm curious about the house in Rubble Street. That's just a single-family home. If you drove by, it would just look like any other house.
That particular property is a duplex.
Okay.
It's at the end of the road. It's one bedroom on each side. And it's a great property. I love it. It's very small, easy to keep up. When we bought it, it needed renovations. It needed a little bit of work, a roof. And we have two individuals, one individual living on each side, and they are thrilled to be on a residential street, have a backyard of their own, a driveway of their own to park in. It's a real gem in public housing.
So the landlord could not have sold that for market rate?
We just happened to be on site early.
Okay.
And we snatched it before anybody else could.
Okay. And I was talking to a tenant, and their concern was that they can't do anything inside the unit as far as painting or making their long-term, their family, and they have no flexibility. Is that the case?
We do allow people to paint their own units, but
okay.
We supply the paint, and
okay.
They can't choose their own colors.
Okay.
Because what happens is people will paint all different colors, and then they move out,
right.
And we're covering black walls with, you know, trying to...
Okay.
Trying to renovate for the next tenant. And we have 30 days to turn that unit over before the state's going to start charging us.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And the final thing, isn't the bill being debated in Congress now? Does it have a lot of money for housing to build back better, Bill? Isn't it?
I'm not sure where that is.
No, the money is debating now.
Mark?
Yeah, so most of you probably know this, but just to put it in context, the Housing Authority is actually a state agency. They're not a local town agency. And they're governed by the state statute and regulations. And as far as the various projects have been talked about, your biggest source, frankly, is probably community preservation funds at the local level. That being said, construction costs, as some of you alluded to, are staggering. As many of you know, I've been involved in Medway Community Preservation for years now. And we actually just working with a non-profit housing, Metro West, constructed senior housing, affordable senior housing, and the town ended up contributing $2 million to that. But that's the magnitude. We're much more invested in community preservation and have been for a long time. Even then, that's a strain. That produced a reasonable number of units, but otherwise you're just going to produce a few units here or there. The driver has to be at least the state and probably the federal as well. And what you're alluding to, whether it's actually included in Build Back Better or not, at various times HUD has had programs with local funding. And in fact, that's the wait for Franklin Ridge, is for these state and federal programs to come through with the funds that allow construction in the kind of magnitude that Jamie was talking about, millions and millions of dollars that are necessary to construct significant housing.
Mm-hmm. What's that thing?
Thank you, Councilor Sheridan. Are there any further questions? Max, if you have a question, come to the... Name and address, please.
Maxwell Marangello, 127 Central Park Terrace, Franklin, Massachusetts. They do a great job supporting me with my disability. I greatly appreciate it. But I also did have another question. The town of Boxborough has a voucher, rental assistance program, that's funded by the Community Preservation Act. And so those are housing vouchers that are run at the local level. Is that something that Franklin can do and that could be supportive of the Housing Authority here?
Jamie?
Two comments. Thanks, Max, for that great idea. So voucher, just so folks know, on January 4th and January 18th, the Community Preservation Committee are going to have their first two public hearings. The committee were legally required to have one. The committee decided to have two, give people a fair opportunity. in the first year to bring ideas forth that, that folks like Max had just put forward. I think the vouchers are certainly eligible under CPA. The only cautionary note I would note to that is that's not a mechanism to increase units. So that's just simply subsidizing for low-income individuals, the fact that the town could subsidize through a voucher program, the rent or some of the costs associated with that, but that's not going to increase the quantity of units to fill any of the demand that's up there. Thank you.
Thank you, Jimmy. Any further comments? Lisa, George, Chris, thank you so much for your presentation this evening and for the information. And based upon the comments and questions that I heard, Jimmy, this is something you might want to continue to have another discussion for the future, either subcommittee or agenda item.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.